Welcome into the Air Race Sports Podcast. I'm Chandler Carney. With me, as always, Brady Scott.
What up?
We're coming to you a little later today. Had some things going on yesterday and this morning, so we're getting a little later.
Got a real bad migraine last night. Went to sleep a little early. Wasn't really in the form or mindset to talk a lot last night, so we're coming a little later today.
Yeah, we're going to bring you all the latest news and all the sports. And to get us started, Brady's going to break down our World Series Game 1 game that's tonight.
All right, tonight's World Series Game 1, I'm really excited about it. Going back, I was right in all my division series. I was 0-2 in my ALCS and NLCS picks as the Brewers and Astros both got beat. Brewers going down in Game 7, and the Astros winning game 1 or 2 and getting swept at home, which I really did not see coming. Really, the key with that series was all the 2-out RBIs that Boston had. I mean, it just seems like majority every run they had was scored with 2 outs and runners on base. Jackie Bradley Jr. just went off in that series with a bases-clearing double in game 2 and the big home run that really put them up. And, I mean, they just rolled over the Astros. It was really shocking. David Price gets his first postseason win ever. We'll see if that can translate to the World Series for him. I'm sure that's great news for Red Sox fans out there. Maybe he's finally figured out how to win and pitch consistently in the postseason. But moving on to World Series Game 1 tonight, we have a huge matchup on the mound with Kershaw going up against Chris Sale. Two guys who are really in the Cy Young conversation each and every year. Two phenomenal pitchers, both lefties, eager to see how the lineups go and manage their way, how the pitchers manage the lineups. I mean, we got two high-powered offenses coming in, and who do you think can win it?
The team that's got the most runs at the end of every game.
Obviously.
I think the Red Sox, they have a really, really good outfield.
Best outfield in baseball, in my opinion.
I don't think many people argue with you on that. Mookie Betts is playing phenomenal. Jackie Bradley Jr., I think that's his name.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been putting up some numbers.
Andrew Benintendi in left field with two basically game-saving catches. I mean, he robbed Alex Bregman in that game to really seal the fate for the Astros, I think. I think that was really the turn in the series, obviously, because if that gets down and the Astros win that ball game, I think they come back and send it back to Boston at the very least.
Yeah, and I think Boston is gonna win the series.
I agree. I just think they have
they're too hot.
Yeah, I mean the Dodgers are playing good, but we've seen the weaknesses in the Dodgers. I mean, it took 7 games to beat the Brewers. And, I mean, it was just an offensive explosion in Game 7. I mean, Chris Taylor made one of the best catches you'll see in Game 7 with the bases loaded. Christian Yelich hits the ball deep in the left center gap. I mean, that ball gets down. There's 2-3 more runs that the Brewers put on to make that game close. I just think the Red Sox have too much for them. But I think the tone will be set tonight. What pitcher can come out and really stymie the other offense and keep them down and get it late in the game and with a lead? Who can get to the bullpen with a lead is what I want to see. But I think it's going to be a fantastic game. I hate that I have class tonight and I'm going to miss the first half of that game. Really tempting not to go to class, but probably going to pull it up on my computer or something, try and keep up with it.
Yeah, I think Kershaw's pitching tonight.
Kershaw and Sale.
Yeah, so that's a good matchup. But like I said, I just feel like the Red Sox are too hot right now to lose to the Dodgers.
Yeah. We'll see. The Dodgers are not very happy about the way their season ended last year either, losing Game 7 of the World Series at their place.
Yeah.
So, obviously, they're back looking for that ring that has basically eluded the Dodgers franchise for so long.
And you've seen the Cubs win it in recent history, avoiding
breaking that streak.
Yeah. It's just hard, I guess, for bigger cities and bigger franchises.
I mean, there's just so much pressure put on by their fan base.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it could be worse. You could be playing in Philly. Man, that fan base is...
Philly's had a great season this year, though.
I mean, Philly fans will murder your kids if you drop a pass.
I mean, that's true.
They don't care, man.
I mean, they're burning their Super Bowl hats because they're 3-4.
Yeah. I mean, the Eagles got booed the first going into halftime of the first game after they won the Super Bowl.
I mean, ruthless. Ruthless, man.
Speaking of ruthless, what about Rajon Rondo and this Chris Paul situation?
I mean, at first I was like, Chris Paul causing more trouble, but then it comes out that Rondo spits in his face, which Rondo's denied, obviously. Looking at the video of it, you really can't tell if it was done purposefully or on accident. But, I mean, haymakers were thrown in that game.
Yeah, Chris Paul's a little bitch, so.
I mean, Chris Paul, somebody spits in my face, I'm not just going to put my finger in their face and say,
I'm throwing hands.
Yeah. I mean, you see what Rondo did?
Yeah.
Rondo just got a finger put in his face and he was throwing hands.
And then Brandon Engel comes in flying with a punch.
Fighting for his teammate, man. You got to love that.
And LeBron didn't, obviously. He was consoling Chris Paul.
Holding him back.
Yeah. Yeah, that bothers me.
I mean, it happens, man.
It doesn't happen. I mean, I don't care who's on the other side. If it's your brother, you know, if he's trying to start a fight with your teammate, you step on that court, I mean, you ain't got no friends. Only people you got is your teammates.
He's just trying to cool the situation off, I think, because you had guys from the Rockets.
Now, he knew Chris Paul was about to get his ass beat, so he pulled him back.
Yeah, that's true. But, I mean, you got to do what you got to do sometimes.
So, LeBron hits the last night, LeBron hits three to send the game to overtime.
Clutch LeBron versus typical LeBron in overtime, missing the free throws and then missing the shot at the end to win the game.
He's not clutch.
It happens.
He's never been clutch.
He's clutch in times. It comes and goes.
And they're also 0-3 start, and people are saying, you know, is this going to work out? I don't think anybody should worry about them starting 0-3.
They've been in every game. They've been in every game late, though. They just had the ball bounce sort of not their way. I mean, this is from the Lakers team last year, this is basically a totally new team. And these guys have never played together before. And people think you're supposed to just step on the floor and be great.
Yeah.
I mean, it took the Warriors a while when they got their core to be good. I mean, it just didn't happen overnight. Those guys played together a few years before they were the Warriors we know now. I mean...
They also weren't that good when they first got in the league. They had to develop into who they are.
Yeah. I mean, you look, Lonzo Ball and Kyle Kuzma, each in their second year in the league.
Yeah.
They're still figuring out the league, much less how to compete for a championship.
I just think that ain't nothing to worry about. And, they'll get on track, obviously. But, I mean, the Pelicans, they're off to a strong start. Which I enjoy.
Yeah. Just something. In basketball, sort of like baseball, you know. Team who starts out hot in April, I mean, it's a long season.
Yeah.
You start out in April, lose 3 or 4 games. That doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to the World Series. You start out 3-0 or hot in October in basketball. Really doesn't mean you're going to do anything late in the season.
Yeah, the only sport you should really worry about a team losing, you know, 1 to 3 games is college football.
Yeah.
If you lose one game, I mean, automatically, you're not playing, you don't control your own destiny as much as you did.
You lose 2 games, you're basically out of the playoffs in college football.
You just need to worry about, are we going to a New Year's Six Bowl or not?
Yeah. I mean, that's really the only thing where it matters. Because even in the NFL, you can start out slow and still get to the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. You see the Patriots do it almost every year.
Basically every year. They don't really figure it out until October. And then it's, rest of the AFC, the Patriots are going to win.
Yeah, people get so, like, you know, the dynasty's over, it's ending, and then they go to the Super Bowl.
It's just what they do.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate it, but you got to respect it.
Yeah, I mean, if Alabama lost 3 games or something, then you can start worrying about,
what's happening? Yeah. What's going on in Tuscaloosa?
Because, I mean, that's just not normal. But, so what's your news of the day, Brady?
News of the day coming out of Denver, as I saw today as I got out of class, is Chad Kelly, former Ole Miss quarterback, has been arrested on first-degree criminal trespassing charges. Really don't have many details other than it was at 1:30 in the morning. I mean, they tested his blood alcohol content, and it was perfect. So, really don't know what he was doing in that situation or why he was even there. If he was lost, who knows? But it doesn't look good for him when it seemed like he had things going.
Yeah.
I mean, beats out the guy in spring training, or fall camp in the preseason, to be the backup quarterback for Denver. Beats out Paxton Lynch. I mean, and the way Case Keenum has played, he's been looking to get time on the field. And then this happens, and you don't know. He may be out of the league now with his past record.
Yeah, he's on a thin rope before this, and after this, it may be shocking to see if they stick with him.
We're just going to have to see the details on it,
though. Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, it really doesn't make much sense right now, but maybe if they release something a little bit more. The Broncos organization have been in contact with him throughout the day, so that's a good thing. But in better news, Drew Brees broke 500 touchdown passes this past Sunday.
Great milestone.
Yeah. He did not get a sheet of paper for this one. I don't know why. I guess because it's not the record.
Yeah.
He just joins an elite club.
That was just a weird thing to do. Like, the referee has a piece of paper in his pocket the whole game waiting to give to Drew Brees. I mean, I feel like there's somebody more important that could give him that sheet of paper, maybe Sean Payton or somebody, than the referee.
Or maybe don't give him the sheet of paper.
I mean, it's a little corny.
It looks ignorant, I guess, in a way.
It's corny.
Let's stop the game and let's give this man a piece of paper. It's official. It was laminated. They went out of their way. It wasn't like it was a notebook piece of paper that said, you know, congrats. It's official. It's in Canton.
That's just weird. Never seen that happen before. Probably will never see it happen again. But who knows? That was just weird.
And more on the Saints, though. They are, this morning, they pick up Eli Apple in a trade from the Giants.
I think that's a good pickup.
Yeah, Eli Apple, he's had some bad time in New York, but he's still a really good cornerback coming out of Ohio State.
I feel like he can contribute and be that number two cornerback for the Saints, like, right away.
Yeah, and if not number two, he's definitely a dime package corner.
He's going to be in the rotation and get a lot of snaps.
Maybe he'll play this week because you see when people get traded, they sit out the first week.
Yeah.
Carlos Hyde.
Being this early in the week, you don't know, though.
Yeah.
Maybe he can get in and get a few plays learned and have a few packages where he can get in there. He's obviously not going to be in full-time, not knowing the defense or the calls, but maybe he can learn enough to where he can be in a few situations if they need him.
Yeah. And it's not a different scheme, really, that much. It's just he's played in a base 4-3 before, so coming into this,
it's all about learning the calls, basically.
The lingo.
Because, I mean, he knows where to be and what to do. It's just knowing what calls it is.
And Amari Cooper got traded yesterday to the Dallas Cowboys for a first-round draft pick.
I don't know if I'd have given a first-rounder for him, but, I mean, he's going to step in and immediately impact that offense as their number one receiver, outside of maybe Cole Beasley, but they're two totally different players. Cole Beasley sort of works the slot and works underneath routes and all. Amari Cooper's a guy that can take the top off of defense and be sort of a deep threat, deep post guy.
But can he, though? He doesn't do a great job at creating separation on the outside, that's the biggest thing.
He runs good routes, though.
But this is the second big trade John Gruden's made since he's been in Oakland, and since then, I mean, he's going to have two first-round draft picks next year.
Three.
Well, yeah, including his.
He has three first-round draft picks this upcoming year.
And then he has a first-round draft pick for the next year. And I want to say he's got a third-round draft pick for this upcoming draft. And then a sixth-rounder for the next year.
I mean, he's got plenty of draft picks.
And what he wants to do is, I will not be surprised if Derek Carr gets shipped out of Oakland this offseason.
No, not at all.
Because John Gruden wants to, he's pretty much saying, you know, if I want to create my team, I'm here for 10 years, I can do whatever I want, really. And So he's going to go in and he's going to get all the draft picks he can get, and he's going to draft guys that he wants.
I mean, they're going to have a high draft pick with their pick.
Yeah.
The Bears pick is probably going to be middle of the road, teens, early 20s. And then the Cowboys pick could be anywhere from top 10 to late teens as well.
Yeah.
So they're picking three times early in this upcoming draft, potentially. And they could get some real good players, but I mean, they're not going to contribute right away and make them a contender, though.
No, I mean, not at all.
But it's not going to be enough to make them win right away.
And I wouldn't be surprised if, like I said, even if they have Derek Carr on their roster at that time, if they don't take a quarterback with one of those picks.
They have three picks in the first round. If the Raiders pick it number one, we got three picks we can use. We can get to the number one pick and do whatever we want. I mean, because I'm sure anybody in the league that's going to be up there will probably take a pick in third or fourth, plus another first-round pick for that first-round pick.
I mean, it just depends on who's there, really, at number one. Because right now we're looking at the Giants, we're looking at the Cardinals.
The Cardinals just took a quarterback
this year. So they wouldn't be taking a quarterback.
So they'd probably be willing to go back if you know the – especially if they trade Derek Carr and you know they're going to get a quarterback, yeah, trade down.
And if the Giants are there, they'd probably trade Derek Carr to them. Yeah. It'd be a scenario to look out for.
Derek Carr and a pick or something. Maybe not a first-round pick, but
– Well, I mean, if I'm trading for that contract, I wouldn't want to trade anything else. You know, you're picking up that contract. That's big money.
No, the Giants getting a pick as well.
Oh, yeah. So
– getting one of those other first-round picks.
Patrick Peterson has requested a trade before the deadline on October 30th from the Arizona Cardinals. What do you think of this, and where do you think he potential landing spots for him? I mean, even if they get a deal done, they've come out and said that they weren't going to trade him, and now he's requested a trade.
I mean, I'm sure he'd love to go back closer to home and play for maybe the Saints, Cowboys, or the Texans, be a little closer to home. But I honestly don't know where they're going to send him, because you don't know what their best offer is going to be.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand he wants to get out of there. They're obviously rebuilding and tanking. It's obvious they're tanking. They're not good.
I really wouldn't even say they're tanking.
They're not competitive. They're
just terrible.
They're not competitive in any game. I don't know. I just don't know where he'll end up. But I think he's still a good cornerback in the league to have.
Well, I mean, he's top three cornerbacks in the league.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to say that he may not even be number one.
I don't think he's number one.
But it really intrigued me that the Saints went and got Eli Apple today. Maybe they're shopping around for him. I don't know.
Maybe he could be a trade piece to get Patrick Peterson. Who knows?
I mean, that's something to look at, because they got a lot of young corners on their team. And some people are going to demand higher contracts when their rookie deals are up.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you had Marshawn Lattimore and Patrick Peterson out there on the edges,
you're set up pretty good. I mean, especially with the best run defense in the NFL.
That's scary to look at for quarterbacks. But moving on from the NFL, we're going to dive into the college football. And we're going to talk first about Auburn and Ole Miss and the disappointment in Oxford all day Saturday. Offense couldn't get anything going against an SEC team. It's like same story, different week. And I mean, Ole Miss really missed DK Metcalf in the red zone.
It was obvious that they missed him. I mean, they looked lost because usually they get in the red zone. I mean, DK's either one-on-one. He's one-on-one, you throw the fade. Throw it up, let him go get it. And if he's doubled, it leaves other guys open across the middle. And with him being out, guys were able to focus more on the run game and across the middle and shut that down, and it was like we didn't have an answer for it.
Yeah.
I mean, it just looked like the defense played well in the first half, holding Auburn 10 points. But they really didn't stop them any. Auburn sort of just stopped themselves, missing big plays. Stidham missed a few big throws down the field. I mean, it really looked like nobody wanted to be there Saturday. That was the thing I got out of it. Nobody wanted to be on the field. They looked disinterested, disengaged. I mean, the coaching in the second half, I mean, we're down 31-9, and we're punting on fourth down and two.
We're going to roll the dice. We're going to go for it.
What's the worst that can happen?
No.
You don't get it and you give them the ball back anyway. They were marching down the field as it was. I mean, they're going to be back where you are in three plays anyway. So why are we giving them the ball back in the third quarter when we have a chance to get a first down, go down and score, and potentially make it a ball game? I mean, and this isn't the first time it's happened.
What baffles me the most is, okay, it's like when they got in the red zone, they didn't try anything different. It's like, okay, DK's not here, so we're just going to try to plug somebody in. And that's not something you can do when...
There's not another DK Metcalf on the roster.
And there's not probably another DK Metcalf in the country.
No.
And my thing is, if you know you're going to miss your biggest red zone threat, implement something new. Do something different in practice that says, okay, when we get in the red zone, we're going to do this.
I mean, they got down there on the 9-yard line and ran the ball twice. I mean, on the second down run, you had A.J. Brown run a little out and slant. I mean, as soon as he took his step towards the outside, the defender bit.
And it was wide open.
And he walked in the end zone. And it was an RPO. I don't know what – I guess Tyamu wasn't looking at it or something. Because if you're looking at it, he was wide open.
I mean, it's typical Tyamu, not showing up in bigger games against good defenses. So
– I mean, he played well.
But you got to make that read.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to say that costs him a game.
It's 1 miss. It happens. Everybody misses things.
This offensive line cannot handle
a formidable front.
Yeah. It's
everybody talks about how good the offensive line is supposed to be. Our head coach is an offensive line guy, and our offensive line is still one of the worst when it comes to big games at protecting the quarterback. I mean, I think even if he pulls that ball, he probably gets sacked. That's probably why he couldn't see him.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he had everybody in his face all day.
But it's a good win for Auburn. They keep their coach a little bit off the hot seat, probably. Nah. People in Auburn calling for his head already.
I don't think a win against Ole Miss gets you off the hot seat.
Well, he put it back on track.
I mean, I was walking in the stadium, you heard people saying, I wish somebody would run out on the field with a $38 million check and hand it to him and say, get off the field. I mean, so that's sort of the feeling in Auburn right now. They're not really a fan of Gus Malzahn right now.
I think Auburn fans are just spoiled. I mean, Gus Malzahn is inconsistent seasons, you know?
I don't think they're spoiled.
But
I mean, I just think they feel entitled because every now and then they'll beat Alabama.
Exactly.
I mean, and Auburn fans look like we look to Mississippi State to see how we match up in our state. I mean, you have it in every state with your big rivalry. You have fans drawing back and forth, and it's hard when the other team in your state's Alabama, and Alabama looks the way they do, and you have one good year every three. And then have to watch them have continued success every year. And they just want to match that, I think. Which I don't think anybody can match that.
No, absolutely not.
Nobody in the country can match what Alabama does.
I mean, there's not even a close second.
I mean, I think Clemson would be the closest thing you have. But then you look at the ACC, and there's really nobody in the ACC that challenges Clemson year in and year out. You look a few years ago when Florida State was challenging them. I mean, that was really the only game they had to look forward to. And then Lamar Jackson and Louisville pop up for a couple of years, and you have to worry about that. But other than that, they really don't have anything to worry about. They load up for about one game a year before the conference championship or playoff, and that's really it. They have an uncontested road.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the biggest problem with them because, I mean, all roads lead to the college football playoff for them.
Yeah.
And to not have that game experience like that.
I mean, and it begs a question of, yeah, they're undefeated, but you look at these other conferences with maybe a one-loss team, do they have better losses than Clemson does wins?
The only thing you could throw in there like that would be, say, Michigan wins out and then win the Big Ten, their losses to Notre Dame, and Notre Dame's undefeated. I mean, that's a good loss. And it was close. It was the first week. LSU or Georgia, you know. If Georgia goes, then their one loss would – if they win out, their one loss is to LSU, and that's not bad.
No.
It's not a bad loss. Speaking of LSU, man, this Mississippi State team went to Death Valley.
You went out on a big limb, shaky limb, man.
Yeah, I was halfway right.
And it broke.
Nick Fitzgerald just can't – I mean, he – he can't throw the football. He couldn't do anything.
No.
And then,
he completes more passes to the other team than he does his own.
Yeah, I mean, he went 8 for 24, 59 yards, 0 touchdowns, and 4 interceptions. His quarterback rating was a 9.8.
That's on a 100 scale, right?
Yeah.
That's not good.
It's not too good.
No, not too good.
But, I mean, he did. He carried the ball 23 times for 131 yards. Didn't score any touchdowns. But you got to think, man. Is it time to move on from Nick Fitzgerald in this offense? I get he's a senior, and I get you're implementing new styles and stuff. But
I mean, I don't care. If he can't fit your system and he's going to be a detriment to you on the field, why play him?
But is there anybody on that roster better suited for this offense? I mean, I really don't think so. I don't think they have one.
I think Keyshawn Thompson can throw the ball a little better than Nick Fitzgerald. But, I mean, athleticism's going to be about the same. They just need somebody in there who can push the ball downfield with their arm. Because once they get that, I think the offense will roll a little bit.
Well, think about this as well. Thompson doesn't have a – he didn't redshirt last year. Is he a redshirt – was he a redshirt freshman last year, or is he a true freshman?
Not sure. I think he redshirted.
So, the thing would be is if he doesn't have a redshirt, I'm not 100% sure. Maybe they're trying to save him for next year with this redshirt, because he played in 2 games last year.
Yeah.
And that rule didn't get implemented till this year.
He's only played in, what, 1 game this year that I know of? He's only started 1 game.
Yeah, that's the only one I know of. It was the Kansas State game the first game of the year
in Starkville.
So, I mean, that's something to look at, definitely, but
I mean, them redshirting him would be the only reason I don't see him getting a shot.
Later on in the year.
Because you can't do any worse.
No.
I mean, you're not going to get any less production out of anybody. I mean, they're scoring 3 points, 7 points a game in SEC competition. I mean, that's just not going to cut it.
And their defense has actually played really well.
Yeah, they hold LSU to 19 points.
Which, I mean, LSU has a mediocre offense.
But, I mean, they stopped him from running it mostly.
I mean, they didn't have a 100-yard rusher.
No.
I mean, the team only rushed for 110 yards.
And that's what they rely on.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you stop what the other team loves to do, and your offense just can't get going.
And you got to think about those 4 turnovers. I mean, your defense can't do everything. No. I mean, if you get the ball up on the other side of the 50, I mean, there's not much the defense can do.
I mean, you have 4 turnovers, and they still only allow 19 points. I mean, you're in the game. They're keeping you in games. Your offense just can't score. And that's the big problem.
Yeah, I mean, LSU scored 12 points on field goals.
Yeah.
I mean, Cole Tracy went 4 for 4. So, I mean, the defense is there.
Yeah.
And there's not much else they can do to keep you in ball games.
I don't think there's anything else they can do except hold somebody scoreless.
But when you're giving up the ball on the 40-yard line, I mean, you don't even have to get a first down to pretty much be in field goal range, you know? So, I think Fitzgerald's hurting him, and I think people are starting to realize that he can't throw the ball, and I don't know why. Maybe we should have started a podcast 4 years ago and told people, hey, you know, Mississippi State quarterbacks can't throw the football.
They haven't been able to for a long time.
So, when you look at Dak Prescott, he really could not throw – he couldn't push the ball downfield.
He still can't throw the ball downfield. I mean, they still rely on the run.
But Joe Burrow, that everybody seems to praise all the time, I mean, he had another mediocre day.
Game manager.
Against an SEC defense.
He's a game manager. That's all he is.
And I get it. They're probably trying to save Miles Brennan because he didn't redshirt last year. He was a true freshman. And – with you redshirting him, you know, he'll get 3 years.
I think he's going to transfer. Because Joe Burrow's back next year.
Joe Burrow's not a better quarterback than Miles Brennan.
But that's 3 years of sitting.
For no reason. He's been the best quarterback on the roster.
We don't know. We can't see the practice or anything. He may not be. We don't know. We can only assume.
I just don't think with the arm talent he has and the IQ for football, that he's not the best option at quarterback.
I mean, you saw Shea Patterson.
Over Danny Etling or anything like that.
I mean, you never know. I mean, I feel like he's going to transfer. He should transfer out. Because I don't see the point in waiting around 3 years for anybody. If you think you're that good.
Yeah.
I mean, get out and go play somewhere.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, everybody, if you don't play, you're transferring and all that. Speaking of quarterbacks transferring, Kelly Bryant was actually in Fayetteville this past weekend, trying to make his decision.
Also been in North Carolina.
Yeah. There's only two schools I know of that he's visited.
I saw one more. I just can't remember the name of it right off the top of my head. But who knows where he'll end up. I mean, wherever he goes, he's there for a year.
Yeah. I honestly think the Arkansas would be the best fit for him. And it'd be the best fit for Arkansas. You get him for a year, and you try to get, you know, your other quarterbacks developed, maybe.
Yeah.
And because Kelly Bryant can run this offense, no problem.
No problem.
And
it's the same offense he's run his whole life.
And it's a safety valve for Arkansas, for sure. And you're getting a really decent quarterback. And he might not throw the ball, you know, a lot, but he can definitely do the RPOs and everything with it.
He has a better arm. He's a better quarterback than anybody on their roster.
Oh, absolutely.
Right now.
Absolutely. If he walked on the field today, he'd be a starter.
He'd be a starter this Saturday.
Yeah.
There's no doubt.
Let's recap the Purdue-Ohio State game. I mean, Purdue took these boys to the woodshed.
From the word go.
It wasn't close.
No, it wasn't close. I started the... After watching game day and seeing the story on Tyler Trent, the guy battling cancer and all.
I really wanted to pick Purdue then.
Almost texted and said, is it too late to change my pick to Purdue?
That's a great story. You know, he's battling bone cancer, if I'm not mistaken. And he called the game, said they were going to win it, and spoke it into existence, man.
It happened. They played for him, I believe.
And even after the game, they interviewed him, and he was like, you know, I didn't think it would happen like this.
No, nobody did.
But
I don't think anybody could see it happening like that. But Ohio State, there's the game.
Yeah.
There's the game this year. They go into somebody's place where they should win and get blown out.
And you probably could see it coming a little bit because they struggled the weekend before. Dwayne Haskins threw the ball 73 times in this game.
That's a lot.
That is a lot.
But they were down early. So, yes. I mean, they really had to throw the ball to try and get back in it.
Well, I mean, they were down 14-3 at halftime.
Yeah.
And at the end of the third, you know, it was 21-6. And so you got to do something really to get the offense going. I understand that. But, I mean, that fourth quarter, Purdue dominated. Put it to rest, you know.
I mean, they left no doubt.
David Blau played a hell of a game. And this is a guy that wasn't even day one starter.
Yeah.
They did not think that he could get the job done.
I don't know why he wasn't the day one starter.
I don't either. But – I mean, 25 for 43, 378 yards, 3 touchdowns.
Yeah.
That's good. And they got a kid there, true freshman, Rondell Moore. Putting up insane numbers, insane athlete. And he was a big factor in why they won that game.
Told you after week one, I said they got a freshman that's scary.
Yeah.
Scary.
He's hands down the best true freshman on any roster as far as impacting the team.
Yeah, he does so much for that team. And running the ball and catching the ball and everything. I mean, he's just all over the field. Anything you need, he's got it.
And he would touch – I mean, you know, if I'm Jeff Brohm, he touched the ball, you know, at least 20 to 25 times a game.
Yeah.
Whether we're handing it to him or giving him screen routes or whatever, he's going to get the ball. I feel like that's how Ole Miss should look at A.J. Brown. Like, you know, if I'm Phil Longo or Matt Luke.
A.J. Brown just doesn't have that speed, though.
No, but he's got the agility to make you miss.
Yeah, but he just doesn't have the speed for those jet sweeps and everything that they want him to run.
But you can swing him out. You can put some bubble screens in, tunnel screens.
I feel like Elijah Moore is a better option to run that play. In my opinion, he's got a little bit more speed, and the agility's about the same. But when you run A.J. on that, he's going to shoot – juke somebody, obviously. He's going to make the first guy miss. But can we hold everybody else off? And that's been the problem. We haven't been able to hold everybody else off, and there's been two or three guys there, and I don't care who you are. You're not going to get out of two or three guys tackling you unless Ole Miss defense is tackling you.
Yeah, that's true. I was about to say that.
And, I mean, he plays for Ole Miss, so he doesn't have that luxury. So he's not going to get out of it.
So the end of week eight, who's your top six with the college football playoff?
Obviously, Alabama's at one. With Ohio State losing, they were my number two. They they're out of the top six, obviously, in my opinion. Clemson was my three, so I moved them up to two. They've turned it around with Trevor Lawrence and started playing solid.
Yeah.
And beating teams like they're supposed to.
Yeah.
I mean, if these were close games, they wouldn't be at two.
Yeah.
But they're handling business and doing what they need to do. Coming in at three, I have Notre Dame. Again, they had the one little slip up game against Pitt, but they really hadn't
done. They survived.
They hadn't done anything.
No.
I mean, they've won the games they needed to win. They've won their big games. So, I mean, they have to be at three. They've done nothing to not be there. And then four, I'm really back and forth off of who I want in there. I guess you got to throw Michigan in there right now.
Yeah, Michigan's playing good.
As well as they've been playing. I mean, yeah, they got the one loss to Notre Dame, first game of the year. New quarterback in a new system. So that was sort of – they were sort of in that game, sort of not. Really didn't figure it out. But their offense has been playing better, and their defense is playing like the defense that everybody predicted coming into the season. So you got to put them at four. And then five and six, it's tough for me. I think even with the loss to Texas, I have Oklahoma at five. No, I have LSU at five. LSU's at five. And even with the loss to Texas, I have Oklahoma at six. I just think down the road, if they do what they need to do, they're going to meet again in the Big 12 championship, and I think Oklahoma handles Texas in that game. So I have them at six with Texas right behind.
Okay, before I give mine, let's get into something. Who's the best one-loss team in the country? I mean, you got a lot of good one-loss teams that still control their destiny, like Oklahoma, like Texas, LSU, Georgia, Michigan, even Ohio State. Because if it comes down to –
I mean, Ohio State beats Michigan.
It's back right back in it. Yeah. Barring that they don't lose any games between then, which I don't foresee happening.
I mean, just looking at it, I think Michigan's the best one-loss team. Just overall, the way they played, their offense looks – I mean, both them and LSU have great defenses. But I'm looking at the offenses, and Michigan offense has just played better than the LSU offense, and that's why I have them above LSU.
I think Georgia's the best one-loss team right now.
Really?
They lost to LSU. I get that.
They lost to LSU.
But I still think that they're the best one-loss team because they went to Death Valley, and to be perfectly honest with you, I just don't think they're prepared for the game. They're like me. They probably think that LSU's not that good. They're not. They didn't believe the hype, and they got the best chance to prove it. Coming out, because, I mean, they got a stretch of games, which LSU does have to play Bama. I mean,
LSU still has Bama, and I believe that's the best game you can play all year. That's the best win you can get in college football.
Absolutely. Against Bama. Against the best team in college football, which is arguably one of the best teams ever.
Ever assembled.
Yeah. So, but Georgia, you know, they're playing Florida this weekend.
That's going to show a lot.
Florida's also a good one-loss team.
That's going to go a long way in determining who wins the East.
And then the next week they go to Lexington.
Whoever wins this game's in the driver's seat, I think.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Florida with the one loss to Kentucky, I mean, Kentucky can't slip up or they're out.
Yeah, and I think this weekend, you know, Kentucky's taking on Missouri. That's going to be something to look at. It could be a trap game for them. Their offense has not been playing well at all the last couple weeks.
I just think Missouri's bad enough. Kentucky can get that game, though.
That'd be a good game to watch. But my college football playoffs, I have Bama at one. I think it's undisputed. There's no doubt. Anybody that tells you differently at this point, I don't think they're just Bama haters, you know. I have Notre Dame at two just because I feel like their one win against Michigan is a more quality win than anything that Clemson – I mean, their win over Michigan is anything better than Clemson has gotten.
Yeah.
And so I have them at two. I have Clemson at three. I have LSU at four, and then Michigan five, Georgia six. But that 4, 5, and 6, at 4 and 5, Michigan, LSU, if somebody swapped them out,
just fine. Looking at it, you could even go 4 through 8, 4 through 10 are still in the conversation to be in it.
Yeah.
The way the season goes, who knows who's going to be there.
I mean, I think there are some people that could go, but they're unrealistic in actually getting there to control it and going. Because, I mean, looking at it, Kentucky actually has a chance to go. If they won out and they beat Bama.
If Kentucky wins out, they go.
Yeah.
Because they're a one-loss SEC championship.
Georgia wins out and go, then they go. Florida wins out and goes, they go. LSU wins out and goes, then they go.
Yeah. I mean, everybody in the SEC right now controls their own destiny. Yeah. All one-loss teams, except maybe Florida.
And you got to think, Washington State over there in the Pac-12, one loss, they're in the driver's seat for the Pac-12 conference.
Florida's the only one in the SEC that needs help because they have the loss to Kentucky.
Yeah.
So they don't have that type of
record. But if they, I mean, if they beat Georgia and then Georgia beats Kentucky.
Yeah, but they need Kentucky to lose.
Yeah, exactly. And then obviously Michigan, Ohio State, one loss teams. Oklahoma, Texas, one loss teams. West Virginia, you can throw them in there.
I mean, both. I mean, Texas, West Virginia, and Oklahoma all control their destiny in the Big 12.
Yeah.
They, whichever one of those two teams went out, they're playing each other in Arlington. I mean, Ohio State and Michigan, they went out until the game. Either one of those went out, they're in the Big Ten championship game. So, I mean, basically everybody controls their own destiny right now except Florida.
Yeah.
On winning their conference.
So, who's your Heisman going into it? Obviously,
it's obviously the number one hadn't changed. It's Tua, but the gap's closing.
You think so? With who?
In my opinion, the gap is closing, and Kyler Murray is coming up on him hot.
You're still riding the Murray train, aren't you?
I mean, all you got to do is look at the numbers, man. He's putting up huge numbers and playing in arguably one of the best offenses in the nation. Them and Bama, I believe, have the two best offenses in the country right now. With nobody, I mean, honestly, I think those two guys are the only ones that are in it right now. Dwayne Haskins still putting up numbers. He can climb back in it.
I mean, he still threw for almost 500 yards.
Yeah, but a loss to Purdue hurts.
It does. But at the same time, as long as he goes to a big bowl game, they don't continue to lose.
I think if Bama keeps winning and then Oklahoma keeps winning, there's a two-headed monster. There's a two-horse race between Tua and Kyler Murray, because with the lack of time that Tua's been playing, one bad game could really hurt him.
Yeah.
A bad game in LSU and then maybe a bad SEC championship could hurt him. But you got to look at it both ways. Both guys have to continue to put up the numbers they have all year to be in it. But I think those are the two guys that are clearly out in front right now.
Yeah, I think McKenzie Milton's Heisman chances kind of got hurt a little bit. He didn't play this past week.
That puts him out, especially after the
Memphis game.
I mean, he didn't play great against Memphis, and then he sits out. I mean, he needed to play every game and play every game very well.
And well, I mean, even against the Memphis, he put over 300 yards of total offense.
Yeah. And the weather hurt him there.
But I just think
he didn't play games. He's out.
I would say he's out, but he's hurting.
He's out.
Obviously, too, is mine going into it. I still, you know, think Haskins, Murray. I still think McKenzie Milton has a chance if he continues.
Yeah.
My dark horse right now, Rondale Moore. Coming out of this Ohio State game. I mean, we've talked about him a little bit, but just the numbers that he's put up overall, he's been playing really, really, really good football.
Yeah. I just don't see him having another game on the schedule, really, that can continue to put him over the top, you know. Everybody else still has that big game looming on their schedule, and Purdue's obviously more than likely out of the Big Ten race right now. And I just don't think he has another big game or another big-time opponent left to get there, you know?
Yeah, I mean, when I say put him in there, dark horse, meaning that it's a long shot for him. Because, I mean, if you go back and look at his games, against Eastern Michigan, he had 16 receiving yards,
You
know? And they lost that game. And they would actually have to keep winning for him to have a chance to go.
They have to win out, and he has to be basically the reason they went out.
Yeah, and I don't think he's going to have a chance to win it by any means. He's a true freshman.
I'm not going to jump on him after
to this. Somebody to look at and to say, you know, this is a possibility that he goes to New York.
You know as well as I do, though, it's a quarterback. It's a quarterback award now more than anything.
Yeah, but...
So they're going to praise the quarterbacks more than anybody else.
You think there's five quarterbacks in the country that are going to get a chance to go?
I don't think there's going to be five people there.
You think there's three?
I think there may just be three, honestly. Three, maybe four. Another guy you didn't mention, one of your favorite quarterback in college football, Gardner Minshew.
He's not my favorite, but, yeah, he's putting up numbers like crazy.
You think he's got a shot?
If they keep winning and he keeps putting up the same style of numbers, the only thing that...
See, I think he has a better chance than Moore.
The only thing that gets me is people like you will be like, well, he throws the ball 50 times a game. He's got to put up those numbers. He still throws the numbers.
It's like Kobe shooting the ball 60 times in a basketball game, and he puts up 50.
But the thing is... That's the offense that he runs.
You made under half your shots, and you got 50. I mean, the thing with him, his completion percentage has to be high.
Yeah.
You can't just look at the yardage numbers. Mm-hmm. You have to look at completion percentage in that style of offense.
And touchdowns. Because, I mean, it's possible for you to throw for almost 500 yards and not throw a touchdown.
Yeah, it's easy.
It's hard to not throw a touchdown, but it can happen. Yeah. So that's one reason why I just said Rondale Moore because the game that he had and he needs to be noticed, especially before next year.
I agree, he needs to be noticed, but I'm just not going to say, oh, he's a dark horse Heisman after having one great game, you know?
I mean, what's your opinion of dark horse? I mean, that's what it boils down to.
Plays on a sort of team that's not winning a lot, but every game he's been putting up numbers, sort of like Gardner Minshew. He's been putting up numbers, but they really haven't been noticed. Nobody's talked about Washington State until this past weekend, have they?
Well, nobody's talked about Purdue until this past weekend, have they?
Purdue's played terrible this whole year, though.
I'm not disputing that. They're 4-3.
They've lost games that they should definitely win.
Well, I mean, okay, so has Ohio State. They lost a game that they should have won. They should have beat Purdue.
Yeah.
But you still have Haskins in there. Kyler Murray, they lost a game to Texas they should have won, and you still have him in there. So,
but you got to look at the other games they played.
Well, what kind of defense is Kyler Murray played against other than Texas?
TCU's not terrible with Gary Patterson.
But a couple podcasts ago, you said they were going to blow him out of the water.
And they did.
So that's a terrible defense.
Is it, though?
I mean, if your logic for Kyler Murray is like this, I mean, for Rondale Moore is like this, it needs to be like that for everybody.
Yeah, but he just hadn't played the big-time opponents. You look at Haskins, you can look back, and he's played TCU in Arlington, which TCU's had a down year, but they're still a better team than everybody Purdue's played except Ohio State. And then he's been to Penn State and won in the wideout. You can look back on those two things and say, okay, he's done this and this, and he still had a good game against Purdue. They just lost.
I mean, Purdue still they have to travel to East Lansing, and then they take on Iowa, and then they play Wisconsin. So, I mean, those are three decent games for him to be at. I mean, Iowa, Wisconsin.
You never know what Michigan State you're going to get. And then Wisconsin got absolutely murdered by Michigan.
Okay, but, I mean, they're still a top 25 team, and they'll still be a top 25 team when he gets there, too.
Texas Tech was a top 25 team, and they lost Ole Miss. So can we really respect a top 25 team that's barely in there?
Okay, Texas Tech lost to Ole Miss opening weekend and lost their starting quarterback in the first drive. A true freshman comes into play. Never had game experience before. You think about it.
Okay, but he played the other two games too, and they were ranked after them. So
he got more game experience. You can't throw a guy in there and them lose and be like, well, they suck.
Why not?
They lost to Ole Miss. And at the time, Ole Miss was still regarded as a great offense.
I'm not saying their defense. I'm just talking about their offense. Their offense couldn't score against this Ole Miss defense. And we've seen the numbers they've allowed this year. I don't care who's in there. It hadn't mattered who we played. Everybody's put up numbers. And it hadn't just been quarterbacks. It's been running backs. I mean, they couldn't even hand the ball off and break them. And that's what got me. If they couldn't push the ball downfield on our defense, and all of a sudden they're a top 25 team when our defense is allowing 41.5 to an SCS opponent.
Well, you think that maybe injuries played a factor in that? Because Ole Miss's secondary is hurting bad now compared to that first game of the year.
Okay, you can look at that in the passing game, but defense line hasn't been hurt. Linebackers haven't been hurt. And everybody's still running it down our throat. So I don't think it makes that big of a difference.
I mean, I'm just saying, like, the arguments that you made for one team, you're not letting that stand for the other team. And it shouldn't be like that.
How?
You're, okay, because
he hasn't played anybody.
Okay, who the hell has Oklahoma played? That's my point. Texas.
And TCU. And
TCU's not that good. SMU was putting up points on them.
Okay.
SMU. And they've lost, like, 3 or 4 ball games. It's not a good defense. It's not.
But he's put up enough numbers.
I mean,
consistently.
Okay.
You just said he had 16 receiving yards against who? Eastern Washington?
Eastern Michigan.
Eastern Michigan.
That's one game.
That's one game where you need to put up numbers.
The thing is, you're making out like I said he was going to win the Heisman, but I said he was a dark horse candidate.
I don't even think he's that. That's what I'm arguing. I don't think he's – I know he's not going to win the Heisman.
There's no doubt he's not going to win the Heisman, but he should be noticed.
He's not
going to
be in New York.
I mean, and you said there's nobody left on the schedule for him to put up numbers against, and there clearly is.
I just don't think he will.
Maybe he won't, but, I mean, there's opportunities for him to do so. Wisconsin's got a good defense. Iowa's got a good defense.
He just doesn't have the same opportunities as other people have.
No.
Being in the position he's in, you know?
Another big thing coming out of the weekend, though, that we probably need to touch on, Scott Frost finally got his first win in Nebraska. And maybe that saw a giant monkey off his back.
It's about time.
Bray said that, you know, he thought he was one of the best coaches, better coaches, despite that. And hopefully that it'll start clicking. I mean, they're not going to make a bowl game by any means.
No, they got to win out.
Yeah, it just even be 6-6. But I think Scott Frost can maybe turn this into motivation for going into next season. If you can get on the winning track, get in the right mind for these players.
I mean, I just think a win was good for them.
It was a much-needed win.
Yeah.
Nobody in college football needed a win bigger than them.
No, but I mean, they hadn't played well all season. That's the best game they've played start to finish all year.
Yeah.
Can they continue to do that? And I think they'll get their second win this weekend.
Who they playing this weekend?
Bethune-Cookman.
Yeah, I mean, if they don't get a win there, then...
If they lose to Bethune-Cookman, I don't think there's any hope for Scott Frost.
That would definitely be a thing to, you know, open your eyes a little bit about him. I mean, he has dealt with injuries on his team, but not
everybody
enough.
Everybody has injuries.
Yeah.
Everybody has injuries.
Going into week 9, if you don't have, you know, 3 or 4 people banged up, like starters, you're lucky. And you're probably lucky if you only have 3 or 4.
And I think they're trying to reschedule this Akron game.
Yeah.
So they can get potentially a 6th win. But they also have Ohio State on the schedule and Michigan State on the schedule.
Yeah, I mean, I don't foresee them making a bowl game this year.
I see them coming out of at least one of those games with a loss. Maybe they win one. Probably not. But they at least have one loss out of those two games.
All right, so you got any final thoughts on our podcast before we close out today?
Worked out last night for the first time in forever. Looked like an old man walking around campus today. Couldn't feel my legs.
Well, they got a pipe shut up your ass, didn't it? That's what I felt like this morning.
I didn't feel like that. My legs were just sort of jello feeling.
Mine feel like they have lead in them. I ain't even lift them. I think I'm done with the working out for the rest of my life.
You can't be like that. You got to power through.
My final thoughts would just be, if you find anything good on TV, you know, a couple good TV shows out there. We actually watched a really good movie the other night. Brady had never seen Creed, which is the reason that he wanted to go work out, because how in shape Michael B. Jordan was in the movie.
Sort of made me, I was watching that movie, I was like, damn, this dude's swole. Sort of made me feel bad about myself. So, wherever you find your motivation, You gotta find it somewhere.
Yeah, you can find it, you know, in a Rocky Balboa series of movies. And after the movie, Brady's like, I showed him the trailer to Creed 2, and he's like, oh, we're going to watch that.
I can't wait for Creed 2.
It's going to be a great, great movie, I think.
Coming out around Thanksgiving.
Yeah, Thanksgiving night it comes out, so we'll have to go see it the following day.
We'll definitely have our thoughts on that.
I think Michael B. Jordan is one of the best actors in Hollywood right now.
No, that's hard to argue.
And just the movies that he's been doing, is Black Panther.
Also, he's fantastic in that movie.
Yeah.
Playing that role.
Well, he first rose to prominence, and I first saw him in, he played the role of Vince Howard in Friday Night Lights. Yeah. And he played that role exceptionally well.
He's a great actor.
Yeah. Even in some of his lower films that didn't really make it a lot, Fruitvale Station, job. All that.
Yeah.
That awkward moment, him and Miles Teller and Zac Efron, those are good movies. He played a role really good.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, that's not his fault, the movie just.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't a real written plot.
No. He got paid, so I'm sure he don't really care.
Yeah. I also went and saw Venom Sunday night, and it was a really good movie as far as Marvel movies goes. You know, it's all right. I would recommend it. I wouldn't give it a 10 out of 10. Stay tuned. It's a Marvel movie. Stay tuned. Sorry for the credit. You had people leaving as soon as, you know, the first roll of credits started coming on, and I was like, rookies.
Maybe they've never been before.
I mean, I don't see why. If you've never been to one, I don't see why you'd go see Venom.
Maybe they were with a friend.
Well, that friend should have known, hey, we got to sit here and wait.
Hey, who knows? Maybe it was recommended by a friend.
That friend should have said, hey, don't leave.
Maybe they're not a good friend.
When you first started watching Marvel movies, what was the first thing I told you? That's like,
stay till after the credits.
It ain't over. It's not ever over.
No. I just feel like they should just go ahead and do that before the credits, you know?
Well, that gives you something to look forward to. It always builds into something, to the next movie.
Yeah.
Or into something.
They could just go ahead and do that before the credits roll. That'd be appreciated.
But it's got to set up that dramatization for the next movie.
It's not drama.
You gotta sit there and wait for it. It's like, oh, what's about to happen?
I just sit there. I'm like, come on, I'm ready to get out of here. My butt hurts from sitting here for so long.
Yeah. All right, that's all we got for you today. Thanks for listening. Tune in Friday as we give our picks and everything out, everything for the weekend. I hope you all have a great day.
See ya.